The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Dose of Leadership Podcast, episode 170.
Welcome to another episode of the Dose of Leadership Podcast, the show that brings you inspiring and educational interviews with today's most relevant and motivating leaders. Each episode is dedicated to highlight real-life leadership and influence experts who dedicate their lives to the pursuit of the truth, common sense, and courageous leadership. And now, here's your host, Richard Ryerson.
Hey, welcome to the show. Richard Ryerson here. Thanks so much for tuning in. I really do appreciate your support. Please make sure you're telling your friends, your family, your coworkers all about this show. Keep this community growing. I appreciate your support. We're continually rising in the iTunes rankings, and I couldn't do it without your support. If you haven't done so, please go to iTunes, subscribe, rate, and review, and let the world know what you think about this show. Again, thank you so much for your support. I want to introduce to you my new partners to the show, 99 Designs. You know, they've been so great with me and helping me with my design of my business. You know, it's all about selection, speed, and creativity. These are just a few benefits of having several designers work for you and helping you on your project. So if you want to start your next design project, I encourage you to go to 99designs.com/leadership and get a $99 power pack of services absolutely free. Well, man, I'm so excited today to have Tom Rayner on the show. He is the president and CEO of Lifeway Christian Resources. Prior to Lifeway, he served at the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary for 12 years, where he was the founding dean of the Billy Graham School of Missions and Evangelism. He graduated from the University of Alabama in 1977. In addition to speaking in hundreds of venues over the past 20 years, Rayner led Rayner Group, a church and denominational consulting firm, from 1990 to 2005. He's the author of 24 books, which I just find amazing, including Breakout Churches, Simple Life, Simple Church, Raising Dad, The Millennials, and Essential Church. His recent book, I Am a Church Member, was number one on the CBA bestseller list for several months, and Autopsy of a Deceased Church was just released in May of 2014. Tom, welcome to the Dose of Leadership Podcast.
Well, it's great to be here. I love what you're doing, dude.
Well, I love what you're doing, you know, and as a fellow podcaster, and of course, you're out there, I can't believe 24 books, but tell us how it all kind of started for you. Why did you get so passionate about leadership?
I was originally a banker. In fact, I was a fifth generation banker, and so I come from a business background, a strategic business background, particularly in the world of corporate banking. And I thought that was going to be my path for life, and I love business, and so I got my degree in finance and statistics and economics, and I started moving in that direction. But then, as what happens to many of us, there's a detour, and it's in my case, it was a good detour, and I went into Christian ministry, so I took a few years off to go to seminary, about 6 years off to go to seminary. From there, I pastored four churches, again, loving exercising leadership skills for a nonprofit volunteer organization, probably one of the greatest challenges I've had in leadership, but again, loved every minute of it. And then from there, entered the world of academia and went to a seminary to be dean, stayed there a dozen years. But what has really been fun is the last few years, because for 9 years I've been at Lifeway, which is kind of the intersection of business and ministry. We're a Christian resource company that's been around since 1891. So we've been through here. And in the midst of all of that, started building a platform, but I didn't know I was building a platform. Some people told me I needed to be writing a blog. And then got a social media guy who said, let's do a podcast. And golly, the next thing I know, I'm blown away, because the podcast has, it's upwards of 5 million views a year. I'm not the podcast, the blog. The podcast is still relatively new, but it's doing extremely well. And I'm just blessed. I love this world that I am discovering, the world of social media. I've only been in social media since 2008, so I'm a mid to late adopter. But I'm loving this world. I'm loving the platform world. And quite frankly, I'm seeing the platform world as a great place for the intersection of business and ministry, and to get the message out that I hope a few people are hearing.
Yeah, you know, it is amazing. I was having lunch with a good friend of mine, and we were talking about that. And I just don't think, and I know you've heard this in that kind of social media setting, that there's been no better time in the history of the planet where any average Joe citizen sitting in the corner of their basement can go out and make an impact on the world if they choose to do so. I mean, would you agree with that?
I would totally agree. There are really two or three different viewpoints on this, and I am with you in your viewpoint. I know what you're doing because, goodness gracious, with all the podcasts you're doing and all the interviews you're doing, it's just off the scale, incredible. There's one view that are saying this is a fad and it'll go away. It's not going away. It's just getting bigger. It's the new foundation of communication. There's another group that thinks that you can get in this and it's just real easy, and you punch a few buttons and all of a sudden you have fame and fortune. I don't think that is
I don't think so. Yeah.
There's a lot of work in this.
Oh, there is. Yes, there is.
But if you do the work, and you know, I am not the brightest bulb in the chandelier, so I know that if I can do it, millions more can do it, but you have to put the work in and you just have to be laser-like focused. And I am with you totally. This new world, Richard, is an exciting world to be in. And there's never been more opportunity, never at any time, to get our message out like we can today, no matter where you are, no matter what you're doing.
Yeah. Let's talk about, you know, your specialty there, dealing with kind of churches that are in trouble and in the ministry. And I got to tell you, give me a few minutes here to tell you about kind of my background. I grew up unchurched, always believing in God. My mom was raised a Seventh-day Adventist, and she had a bad experience with church as a childhood. And she never forced it on us, but it was always a part of my life. But then me and my wife kind of got involved with it and got baptized and did all that. Had a challenge, you know, a crisis in our marriage. Because of me and getting away and dropping the ball, and the church was great for a moment, but then it was amazing how no one really knew what to do once the dirty work needed to get done and kind of the scars were revealed and the truth was exposed and everything. No one really knew what to do, and it left kind of a bad taste in both my wife and my experiences with the church. Love the church, would always like to connect back. I think it does great work. Is that a common problem for someone like myself who considered myself unchurched, but a believer and wants to believe and wants to know more, does believe in God, believes in that we're here for a purpose? I believe all those things, but I just haven't found the church because it seems like every experience I have with the church, something gets off kilter. And it's just, I don't know, it's the humanness of it, I guess. And that's a lot to kind of throw at you. But what do you think when I just said all that?
I resonate greatly. As a matter of fact, a lot of my research has been done on the unchurched, those who are not in church. I've done it on the de-church, those who were in church and are now out, the unchurched, those who've never been. And your story, though it does have its own uniqueness to it, is being repeated in similar ways all across America. And that's one of my concerns, particularly the Western church and the American church. We Christians in these churches are shooting ourselves in the foot. We have a great opportunity to reach a large number of portioned people because they're like you. They believe that there is a God. They're not antagonistic toward Christians. So there might be a small percentage of them out there, and there's a great opportunity. But we in our churches got to start acting a little more like Christians in order to be the type of the metaphor is salt and light in the world that will attract people. I did research on the millennial generation, ended up writing a book about it and with my youngest son. And what we found is a pretty small percentage of that generation born between 1980 and 2000 are believers in Christ. A large percentage of them, though, are receptive to things that are our message, the gospel message that we have. And so we in the church, we Christians, people like me, have to do a lot better job of showing more of our faith instead of just saying we believe cognitively, but demonstrating we believe it as we interact with others.
What is it? What can we do in terms of how can I phrase this? Especially as a middle-aged man myself, and this is one thing that's always kind of bothered me, and and I, to be quite honest, is part of the reason why I created this podcast, and to find and get around people like yourself and other thought leaders and people who are in tune with the heart and common sense. But especially as a man, specifically speaking as a man, you know, I've gone to these like Fight Like a Man conferences, and where, okay, we get a bunch of Christian men together, we get a lot of accountability partners, I'm all in for that. But then I go up there and I see another 45-year-old man standing out there with like acid-washed jeans and spiked hair. He's got Axe products in his hair, and there's a rock band behind him. And there seems to resonate. That's not what I'm looking for. And it's almost like we to feel like we got to connect, we got to be like that. So I see a lot of that. I know I'm kind of stereotyping here. But then the other part of it, which I'm not attracted to either, is this kind of like, okay, you've got to put on the suit, you got to follow the rules, and you got to do these rules because the rules and the religion, you know, that's what turns me off too, you know, kind of the religion aspect of it. Does that make sense?
It makes sense. And basically, you when you look at the man that is in between those two, you pretty much got a biblical description of Jesus.
Yeah.
He was not that hyper rebel that that he was a rebel, nor was he the suit guy that had to get all cleaned up, and he's the one in between, and that's where we need to be instead of these stereotypical extremes.
I love that you said that, because you're absolutely right, because at the core of it is this calm, confident, courageous presence, right? I mean, that's really what it's all about.
That is it. Hey, you're helping me a whole lot with some ideas for the future, so thanks for all
Hey, no problem. No problem. But no, I love talking about this stuff because, again, you know, and it's funny watching my daughters, my two oldest daughters are 17 and 15, and they're kind of in that phase, and I kind of remember being in that age, and they automatically associate, and we go to a live in a very strong Catholic community, and we're not Catholic. I have four kids, so I play one on TV, and that's how I embedded myself into this community. I always joke with the my Catholic friends around here. But they're very, you know, asking a lot of questions and rebelling almost against towards, and this isn't anything, anybody can believe what they want, but they kind of fight getting closer with God because of some of the dogmas. Dogma the right word? Or some of the rules? What I guess I'm kind of struggling with, how can I get them more involved with the leadership, the calm, courageous aspects of God, which I know is out there? How can I get them more to see that side of it, I guess? Does that make sense?
It does make sense. And in the midst of all of the bad news, Richard, about churches, there is a lot of good news that is taking place. Not knowing where you live, I wouldn't know exactly where to direct you, but I can say this, in almost any community of size, and even the smaller communities, there are churches now that are representing exactly what your daughters and you have been missing.
Yeah.
And they're representing that. Now, here's what I think. I think if you just begin asking around the Christian community and you start asking the question, you know, where are the young people going to church in town?
Yeah.
What's happening? I think if you tell your daughters, hey, let's go together and let's just see what happens. Go out with your own man. You might be surprised at some of these churches and what's taking place. Yeah. I take the risk.
Yeah. Well, that's what's exciting. That's what I want to do. I don't know. Didn't mean to digress too much from leadership, but it's just, it's just kind of wanted to share with you where I'm at.
Actually, you're talking about some of the most significant form of leadership, which is parental leadership.
Oh, I know. And that's stuff that's the most challenging, right? I
mean, it is. I've got three grown boys, and I thank the Lord that they have grown and they're doing well. But I can say that I was an imperfect parent, and my wife was near perfect. But they have done well despite me.
How much, you know? I had a guest on the show recently, and it was kind of an amazing insight they talk about. And she was thinking that, you know, our kids are gifts from God, given to us, as not so much as we so much that we transform their lives, that God has placed him in our lives to really transform us into the person we're meant to be. And that, I thought that was just kind of eye-opening when I looked at it that way. Not that you know, we're still the parent and we set the example, but when you have kids, that's really the moment that you really start to begin to transform who God has meant you to be. What's your thoughts on that?
Absolutely. First of all, the comment that you made about their gifts from God, that is absolutely true. Any type of gift that is a positive gift, and of course we would say a gift from God is definitely a positive gift, is transformative. So the very fact that we have been given children as a gift is transformational. And what happens is if we are good parents, the kind of parents that I was not, the kind of parent that I was not always, but those few times I guess that I was good, it is sacrificial love, it is selfless love, it is putting others before ourselves, and it is that type of parenting that causes us to become more mature and the better leaders in all facets of life.
How were you as a leader, say, when you looked at when your kids were first born, you were just kind of getting started in this call to ministry as compared to you are now? What has been the biggest transformation?
Really, it has been traveling for me. And the biggest transformation is the fact that I was gone for a long time. That may not be the specifics of your question. You may be asking what has changed more. But for me personally, I was on the road a lot. And so my wife made up a lot of the void that I left. But what has changed most about parenting? My oldest is 34 years old. My youngest is 29. To give you, I'm 59 years old. To give you the age perspective, and here's what I found, Richard, is that when they were children, for the most part, the culture in which they were in was not contrary to the Christian biblical worldview that I have now.
Yeah.
And now it is different. And I'm not trying to come across as some type of legalistic, narrow-minded, Pharisaic type of person that is bemoaning the condition of culture. But I'll just simply say this. I think it was easier for me to raise children 30 years ago than it is for parents to raise children today, because the cultural competition in many different ways is so incredibly challenging.
Yeah.
And the culture in which I raised my boys was not as challenging. It was challenging, but not as challenging.
Yeah, it definitely is scarier now. I mean, I can't imagine being, and it just kind of, it's a slow fade. It kind of creeps up on you, but just even, you know, as much as you and I both love technology and how great it is for us, but it's completely different to how you and I, even growing up as kids ourselves, it's completely different, and the challenges are much greater. And even on thinking of that, I can't, you know, my daughters, I can't even imagine, and I live just outside of the city, but just having them walk down the road by themselves scares me. And I remember when I was a kid, we were constantly gone. I'm sure it was the same with you. You probably came in when the lights came on, you know, the street lights came on. So I can't imagine doing that now. I really can't imagine doing that now, honestly.
Oh, I know. Absolutely. When I was a child, I could roam around town anywhere I wanted to. There were no cell phones. My parents didn't know where I was. They just told me what time to be back, and everything was fine.
Yeah.
It's a whole new world. It's a scarier world. But I still am an obnoxious optimist about the future of our young people around here, and I think they're great opportunities.
Hey, halfway through the show, I want to take some time out, just a brief moment, to talk about my partners at 99 Designs. You know, if you were like me in the beginning, I remember I was dreaming of a logo, a perfect website design, but I didn't know how to get started. I was worried about a budget. Well, that's where 99 Designs came in, and they can certainly help. 99 Designs is the world's largest graphic design marketplace, and it makes it easy for you to get a design that you love. Just go to their website, tell them about the design you need, and pick a price package that works for you. And that's where the fun really starts up. And this is what I loved about the process. Designers from all around the world will submit awesome designs, and you give them your feedback. And within a week, you get to pick out your favorite and be the proud owner of a gorgeous, unique new design. With thousands of designers at your fingertips, there's no limit to what you can get designed. I've used 99 Designs, and I love working with them and what they did for me. So what is it that you need? You can boost your brand's visibility with a t-shirt, drive more traffic with a sleek new banner ad or a landing page, whatever it is you need. Projects start at just $199, and your happiness is always 100% guaranteed. Visit 99designs.com/leadership, and you can get a $99 power pack of services absolutely free today. Go check them out. I love that I've reached this topic a few times about the millennials, and I'm curious. I think you probably share the same, and I'm excited that you're an optimist about it, because I have become much more optimistic since this show, and talked and had a lot of millennials on the show, a lot of millennials in the circles that I run around with. There seems to be this surge of optimism, this surge of servant leadership in that generation that I didn't see in maybe my generation, the one right behind mine. What are your thoughts on that? I feel optimistic in this surge of servant entrepreneurship, is how I'll call it.
Okay, rather than give you my thoughts, which are not worth 2 cents, I'll give you the research we did. And again, I understand on a podcast like yours, any type of shameless plug.
Absolutely, that's good. It's all good.
It's really shameless. But my youngest son in IGS, he's 29 years old now, wrote a book called The Millennials. And what we did is we had a massive research project where we interviewed the older millennials, and there were 1,200 in the interview. It was a very statistically sound sample. It was a massive research project. So rather than give you my opinion, I will speak for them because they spoke to us. And here is what I found about that generation. Now, I'm specifically talking about those born between 1980 and 1990, the older part of the millennial generation. This is a generation that I think really has the big picture in mind. They're a generation that is altruistic. They're a generation that wants to be a part of something that makes a difference, and they're willing to do what it takes. I came away from the research project that resulted in our book called The Millennials just blown away and saying, hey, I'm one of these old geezers who is not looking at this young generation and saying things are blowing up badly. I'm one of these old geezers who are looking at this next generation and say, goodness, things are really great for the future if they continue on this trajectory. They are really, really looking at the big picture, have a big vision, and they really have a focus. They want to make a difference in this world, a positive difference. And that's why I remain an obnoxious optimist.
Well, I love that. I love the term obnoxious optimist, and it makes me feel good in so many ways that you did that research and you guys and put it out there, because I sensed it. I've asked, you know, multiple people on this show, because it was a feeling that I got when I kind of tuned away from the traditional kind of sources of information and really started digging and connecting with people who are in there, and it just seems very positive. And I agree with you. I think that if they can continue down that path, continue to kind of ignore the noise, so many great things can happen in this world.
You know, I didn't do it actually. My son did an interview with I'll let it be unnamed at this point, a person with a very pretty well-known radio show, and the person asked my son what he thought of the millennials, and he gave a similar answer. He was very encouraged and optimistic, and the person said, that can't be, and started naming isolated examples of bad millennials. Well, there are 78 million of them, so you're going to find a few bad ones in there. And he kept saying, but the research says, and the overall, and he said, oh, that research is bunk. And he said, well, the margin of error is only 3%±3%. Well, that means nothing. Took the opposite position, and he held his ground and said, I'm sorry, I just believe that the future of this generation is great.
Well, I'm with you on that camp, and it encourages me, and it's part of the reason why I keep going and keep digging and keep finding those stories, because there's just so much negativity out there. You know, things do seem to be, even with, and I am an optimist, and I'm going to steal that term obnoxious optimist from you. I like
Go
that.
For it.
And, but even when I look around, I think, you know, things seem to be, if you look hard enough and look in the right way, things seem to be spiraling out of control on so many fronts. Lack of accountability, common sense isn't common practice. And I don't know. I mean, what can we do to turn it around? Obviously, we got to turn to God. But what can we do as just individuals, people that don't have the leadership position, we don't have the title? Maybe we're involved in a church, maybe not. Maybe our church is declining like you deal with, and it's just – We seem lost. What do we do on an individual level?
I have had this question broached with me in different ways. And again, my audience is primarily church members and Christians. And because of the way you described it, you described maybe world affairs and all of the all of the violence that is taking place and the disruption that is taking place in different, whether it's on the Texas border or whether it's in a Middle Eastern state and or Russia and Ukraine, and we could go on and on that. And there's a sense that things are spiraling out of control. Well, on a micro scale, there are many churches that feel that way as well, and so a similar question has been asked. Why? What can we do in a local church? And I would give the same answer that I have given to church members that I would give to those who are outside the church. The more that we can make a difference by deciding that we are going to put others first, that we're going to be selfless in our actions and seek to put others before us, the more that we can have an altruistic motive, which is what I'm learning from this millennial generation, the more we can change the world within our sphere. And it may be bigger than we think because of the exponential effect of our effect on one person over another. So I'm one of these people who believe one person can make a world of difference. And I believe that if we stop being so selfish and become more selfless, not only will the world change, but our lives will have greater purpose and be more fulfilled as well.
I love that answer. And you're so true, so dead on. I mean, it's just the fact that if you feel like it's kind of like, I can't remember who told me this, like you're tired, you know, you want a better marriage, then be a better spouse. You want to have a better job, become a better worker. I mean, all those things you have, we have so much influence and power, and I don't mean power in the negative sense. I mean it in the fact that we can add value to someone else's life, the power that we can add value to somebody's life, no matter who we are. It can be a complete stranger. And if we make that decision to do that, you can literally change the world. At least you're part of it, at least start the change of it.
Absolutely. I heard someone, I was listening to a video last night, and I heard someone talk about someone else. So this is very third hand. And they said, this person wakes up in the morning and starts telling herself this single word, loving, loving, loving. And that is how she wants to describe herself, and that's how she wants to be. And so she goes through the day and says, I want to be loving. And now she is known as this great loving woman, and she's actually changing lives. That's one person changing the world. Mother Teresa, to use the extreme altruistic example, the selfless example, did not start off as someone famous. She just decided to be someone who would put others before herself.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely right. I remember I was talking to Jim Kuzes on this show, and we were talking about this, and you just look at the actions of Rosa Parks, just, you know, who, a seamstress on her way home from work, and what did she do? She refused to stand up. She said no, and she said, go ahead, call the cops. I mean, those are three things that all of us can do. It doesn't,
that's right.
It doesn't require a degree or any source of education or money or an off-site retreat to come up with a strategy. It's just make a decision to do it.
And absolutely. You nailed it.
Yeah. So who are your heroes? I'm curious about that. Who did you really look up to growing up and even now?
I had several heroes. One was my father, and many of us have had good father figures, and he was a small-town banker and a small-town mayor, and he had opportunities to go other places. He was a World War II hero, two Purple Hearts. And I just watched him, and he was just absolutely giving of self, giving to others. I was raised in South Alabama in a very prejudicial era, a lot of racism where I grew up. And Dad stood out as one who stood up for the African-American race when others were not. And so I watched him, and I just learned a whole lot from him. Then there was another person whose name will not mean a whole lot to people. His name was Dewey Corder, and he was a pastor. And he embodied what I thought a Christian leader should be. And so those are some of the, you know, the no names that have been my heroes. Now there are others that would be more prominent in name, some who are deceased. And I think everybody would expect to say Abraham Lincoln was a hero, because that's just kind of right. Everybody's going to say that, but he was. I mean, his courage and his articulation of values just really made him one of my heroes. And on both ends of the, not necessarily ends of the political spectrum, but in two different parties, I like JFK. I like JFK because of his vision that America would be something greater, and that this is a greater place, and we need to make something of it. I've always liked those who pushed us to be greater than we are, and who inspired us to be different and to make a difference. So when you look at those type of people, those have always been my heroes. Now, I got to say this, we're almost into football season, and I'm a University of Alabama graduate.
There you go.
I grew up on the campus. I didn't grow up. I went to college on the campus of the University of Alabama. And I love Bear Bryant.
Oh, yeah.
I loved a lot of the things he stood for as well. So I'll put that little plug in. But other than that, you know, who would be one of my living heroes today? Most of them would be people whose names you would not know.
Yeah.
that who have made a difference in my life, and I look up to them right now. And I wish, you know, here's the sad thing, Richard. I wish I could quickly articulate more heroes who are alive today than that are known, but not quite as many in the political realm or even in other areas. So mainly those people who are close to me who have made a great influence.
Yeah, well, it's, you know, typically I typically ask that question on every interview, and it invariably goes back to people that nobody really knows, and it's always that close family member, obviously a parent or a grandparent or a teacher or a coach, someone at that close of an intimate level. And that's what's I always bring it up, and it always reminds me just, again, how much influence we have as individuals. Doesn't matter what our title is.
And you know, I would say very clearly and quickly that my three greatest living heroes right now are my three sons and my wife.
Yeah.
And my I look up to my boys. I used to be their dad, but now I look up to them as leaders and men to whom I seek advice, from whom I seek advice. And my wife is great, godly, courageous. She's a cancer survivor. She's always been selfless. And those three boys and that wife are four of my living heroes every single day.
Oh, I love it. I love it. Well, gosh, I'm looking at, you know, when I look through your website, your blog, and the books, 24 books, that's just amazing. And there's so many, you know, coming across. I mean, I just looking at the titles, you know, The Unexpected Journey. I mean, that looks just absolutely fabulous. You know, the stories about raising dad, what fathers and sons learn from each other, Simple Life, God, Time, Relationship, Money. I mean, these are just topics, and the millennials connecting to America's largest generation. These are just topics that are just so relevant to today. And I thank you for this great body of work. I'm excited to dive into some of these more. I mean, what's about your latest one? Is it The Autopsy of Deceased Church? Is that your latest one? Is that correct?
That is correct. Autopsy of Deceased Church was released in May. And I'm excited because the previous book, I Am a Church Member, is the number one Christian book in America right now in Christian Booksellers Association. And Autopsy of Deceased Church is number three. So I'm kind of blown away that I have two in the top five right now. They're very short books, which tells you a couple of things. One is it's possible to get some information out in a short time. And two, I'm not smart enough to write long books anymore.
Well, at least you got a book written. I mean, it's just every time I try to sit down, I just feel all these this resistance and these obstacles to even start writing. So it's just impressive that that you got such a good
Don't be too impressed. One of the indications of writing 20-plus books is that you're old.
Yeah, you're too hard on yourself. So what's next for you, Tom? What's coming up for you and your ministry? What can we be looking forward to?
Well, I still have this passion for the local church, and there's a lot of stuff that is going on that is seen through my website, tomrainer.com. And I have a heart for unhealthy churches, and I believe that the church can be the mechanism that often government cannot be. And I think the churches have largely failed, and as a result, we have looked to others that may not be as the best way to provide help for people and hurting people particularly. And so I am focusing on the area that is a big phrase, revitalizing churches. But the whole idea of church revitalization and helping unhealthy churches become healthy is a large focus of mine. I work a lot with church leaders, and that's really my niche. It's not that small of a niche because there are a lot of them, but it's still a pretty focused niche. And that's where I'll be going. That's where my platform is now and probably in the future.
All right. You can tell you a little bit more about Rainer and Leadership. I guess it's supporting everything we've talked about here, but give a quick plug for your podcast.
I'm sorry, say that again.
I was just saying, give a quick plug out for your podcast. And you got Rainer on Leadership. We talked about it briefly in the beginning, but just give me a quick shout out for your podcast and what we can expect from that.
We will continue to have more on the general topic of leadership, but you'll hear specifically more on the issue of church leadership, Christian leadership. And every now and then, you'll hear something about family leadership. I can't stay away from the issues of family, but my audience is more demanding that I talk about the church and issues related to the church. So I'll continue that weekly podcast. We actually release it on Fridays, and then it's available continuously on iTunes and other platforms. And been pleased. That's why I'm kind of excited to be here with you. And you're the podcaster talking to those who podcast and have other social media forums. I've been pleased that it has started well and is continuing to grow and do well. And I will put the time into it.
Very good. Well, we'll have links to all this on the post. TomRainer.com is his website. Again, you have a link to that. His podcast is Rainer on Leadership. Lifeway.com serves a lot of the products that he supports. A great – we didn't talk much about Lifeway, but man, oh, man, talk about some resources there.
It is. It's a lot of resources here. It's, I think it's one of the largest, if not the largest, Christian organization around today, and 5,000 employees and our big retail chain, and we book publishing, Bible publishing. I could go on and on, but there's a lot to Lifeway.
All right. Again, all these links will be there. Tom, what a pleasure to have you on the show. I'd love to have you come back in the future. I look forward to staying in touch with you. Again, thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks for all you're doing, Richard. This is exciting.
Yeah, thank you. Talk to you soon.
Okay.
Richard invites you to become a part of the Dose of Leadership community. Visit doseofleadership.com and sign up to receive his free Common Sense Leadership ebook, a guide that highlights how all of us can learn to become calm, confident, consistent, and courageous in all aspects of our lives. Richard is also available as a speaker for your next event. Richard specializes in practical leadership and change management. He has a philosophy of inspiring everyone to think and act like a leader, which is based on timeless natural principles and common sense. You can get more info by visiting doseofleadership.com.